From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gastina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.
Coming up this week, the Ethics Commissioner quits as a panel meets behind closed doors, and just days later, a new one is named. I'm Katie Britton, in for David Gastina. Also on this week's Legislative Gazette, it's now up to the voters to expand gambling in the state. Plus, amid charges comes concern about voter confidence, and the U.S. Senate hears testimony about energy drink marketing. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. Governor Andrew Cuomo says it's now up to the voters to decide whether they want to expand gambling in New York State. He signed into law a plan to build casinos upstate, but the public must approve a change in the state's constitution in order for it to move forward. Karen DeWitt reports.
The new law permits up to 4 gambling casinos in upstate New York, as long as a referendum on November's ballot is approved to amend the state's constitution to allow the expanded gambling. Governor Cuomo says it will be up to the voters to decide.
That's going to be up to the people of the state. I think that casinos are, and gaming is, a controversial matter by and large.
Polls show New Yorkers remain evenly divided on whether allowing more casino gambling in the state is a good idea or not. The governor says it's not a matter, though, of whether to allow gambling in New York. He says it's already here. There are several Indian-run casinos and racinos with slot-like machines at numerous horse racing tracks.
The truth is, we already do have gaming in the state. And we have gaming all around us. You know, if we don't do it in New York, people go to Pennsylvania, people go to Massachusetts, people go to Connecticut, people go to Native American casinos, as we have here in Western New York. So it's not really a question of gaming or not gaming. We have gaming. Whether we like it or not, we're there.
Cuomo has not yet said whether he will personally promote the gambling referendum. The governor was in Niagara Falls to highlight a $139 million settlement with the Seneca Indian Nation over gambling and other issues. Part of the agreement gives the tribe continued exclusive rights to operating casinos in western New York. There have been similar settlements with the Oneidas in central New York and Mohawks in the North Country. So if voters do approve the referendum, the casino would be built in the Albany region, likely near Saratoga, the Southern Tier, and in the Catskills. Cuomo has branded the legislation the Upstate New York Gaming Economic Development Act, and he says he hopes to establish world-class destination gaming resorts to bring jobs and boost local economies. But not everyone thinks it's the best solution to Upstate's continued lagging economy. E.J. McMahon, president of the fiscally conservative think tank, the Empire Center, says the building of resort-style casinos won't generate as many jobs as some other industries, like opening up the state's vast shale resources to hydrofracking.
He's stalling the approval of regulations that it would allow something that there's no question would boost the economies of the parts of upstate New York that are weakest, which is the Southern Tier, in particular in central New York. While promoting gaming, actually what he calls destination resort gaming, which in fact no one seriously believes is going to be a significant economic boost. It's really, at this point, it hardly passes a laugh test to suggest that a significant so-called world-class destination gaming resort, to use one of the governor's favorite phrases, is going to open in, say, Binghamton or Elmira.
Governor Cuomo has yet to make a decision on whether to allow fracking to go forward, saying he's waiting for his health commissioner to finish a study. The state has been considering the gas drilling process for over 5 years. As if to underscore the state's continued economic problems, Cuomo and other top state elected officials, including Senators Schumer and Gillibrand, issued a press release. In it, they condemn a decision by the new owners of Bausch & Lomb to relocate the company's headquarters from Rochester to New Jersey. They say moving the 160-year-old company from its original location will result in potentially massive job losses. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now is Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Alan, the State Ethics Commission met and spent most of its time in a private session. Patrick Bulgaro, a key appointee of Assembly Speaker Sheldon Silver, resigned from the board. Now Silver has appointed former Judge Renee Roth to the state's Joint Commission on Public Ethics. Your thoughts?
Well, first of all, when they put this Jay Cope together, some people call it Jay Joke, it was supposed to be a real advance. And it was in one way. Previously, there had always been one group that looked over the ethics of the legislature. They were really generally a do-nothing or do very, very minimally little group. It was a joke in itself. Then there was an ethics commission that oversaw the executive branch, and they were far more effective, but they tended to pick on little guys as opposed to the biggest fish in the sea. And then Andrew Cuomo comes in, and he does what a lot of people thought were impossible. He transcends this idea about separation of powers. He gets all of the branches to agree that they would come together and have one ethics commission for the whole state. Well, everybody yelled hurrah. The biggest yeller of hurrah was Andrew Cuomo himself, who said, look, he flexed his muscles and said, look at me, I did this. Turns out he did very little. One of the big problems with it was that the legislative leaders had their own picks on this board of ethics. And of course, him who appoints you is him who calls the tune. And so what happens is that at least one of the key appointments from Sheldon Silver was a very well-respected man in state government, the former budget guy, Patrick Bulgaro, who everybody thinks highly of. Because believe me, when these people make these appointments, they better be good. When Bulgaro went on, a lot of people said, well, that's a very good appointment. But now he's quit. Why did he quit? No one has any idea, really. People are making stuff up. People are saying because of the Lopez scandal in the legislature, the sexual scandal of having, given women a hard time. That's why the whole affair is being called, instead of Lopez, Gropez. There is this feeling that maybe that was it, but nobody really knows. So he's out. Now Silver appoints a respected judge. She has to come in. And of course, it's very important that it's a she, because in this case, it's all about, you know, women at this stage of the game. Now, the women in the Democratic Conference are supporting Sheldon Silver. And if he was ever to have a tough contest, they would have to be on the other side, particularly because Silver found some state money, some legislative money to defend Lopez when he was in such trouble. So now the women in the conference are behind him. He appoints a respected female judge, and we have to see whether or not she's taking orders from Silver or whether she's capable of, you know, deciding some of these cases on her own. One can only hope that that's the case. And so that's what we see here.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. You're listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm Katie Britton, in for David Gustina. With the indictment of the Dutchess County Democratic Elections Commissioner and a former Republican Elections Commissioner on misconduct and other alleged violations of election law, the job of ensuring voter integrity begins. Allison Dunn has more.
Dutchess County Democratic Elections Commissioner Fran Knapp and former Dutchess County Republican Elections Commissioner David Gamache pleaded not guilty in Dutchess County Court Tuesday. Knapp was arraigned on 46 felony charges and 48 misdemeanor charges, while Gamache was arraigned on one felony misconduct charge and three misdemeanor charges for allegedly certifying votes cast in the November 2012 election. which reflected altered votes in two districts in the town of Pine Plains. Knapp was similarly charged, though the bulk of the charges against her focus on allegedly allowing the names of designated agents of absentee voters to be changed on the computer without the knowledge of the absentee voters. Here's Dutchess County Executive Mark Molinaro, a Republican.
We have witnessed, really across the country, sadly, but in the state of New York, at best a circus, at worst criminal activity that really has tarnished the public service process and the political system.
The elections commissioners are appointed by the county legislature. As to what happens next in reference to Knapp, Molinaro says the following is the first step.
The chairman of the legislature and I will be meeting today with legal counsel to at least discuss both the nature of the allegations and the rights of either the legislature, the county as a whole, or the state of New York, as commissioners of elections are agents of the state, and then determine what is the best and most appropriate step.
Knapp faces other charges, including one stemming from September 2012 for allegedly fraudulently signing a poll watcher certificate on behalf of state Senate Republican primary candidate Neil DiCarlo. When asked whether he would call for Knapp to step down, Molinaro said,
I certainly think that every effort must be made either voluntarily or administratively, to ensure that the integrity of the process is restored and preserved, and that there is no question of impropriety moving forward. Beyond that, I'll reserve my opinion and judgment.
Barbara Bartoletti is legislative director for the League of Women Voters of New York State.
Horrendous for the voters who need to have confidence that the election system, the voting systems, work in their communities.
She says if the cases are not straightened out and voter confidence is not restored, voter distrust could impact the 2014 gubernatorial and state legislative elections. Democratic State Senator Terry Gibson, whose district includes most of Dutchess County, is up for re-election in 2014.
There just cannot be any doubt that the public has the full trust in the integrity of our democratic process, and clearly today there is doubt in that. And so I hope that the legal process takes the course it needs to take to rectify this.
He says the allegations are disturbing.
Campaign and election reform has been a top priority of mine, and so I'm very concerned about these allegations against the cornerstone of our electoral process here in Dutchess County.
County Executive Molinaro, a former state assemblyman who was a ranking minority member on the Election Law Committee, says election reform and transparency is needed, especially given the allegations in his county.
What is alarming to me is the broad nature of the allegations, the breadth and scope of the allegations.
The League of Women Voters Bartoletti says the allegations bring to mind actions outside the U.S.
In emerging democracies, you see all of this type of thing, trying to manipulate the vote. But in a country like the United States, where we and our local communities, where we pride ourselves on having the voters have their say, and that's how our democracy works, this is extraordinarily bad for democracy as a whole, never mind the local voters.
A message left for Knapp was not returned in time for this broadcast. Dutchess County Republican Elections Commissioner Eric Haight, in an emailed statement, says, quote, Commissioner Knapp deserves her day in court like anyone else. However, her many years of deceit and gross misconduct may have fooled the public up until now, but I highly doubt she will be able to fool a Dutchess County jury of her peers, end of quote. Both Haight and Knapp have battled verbally for some time. Both cases are due back in court August 12th.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
A small business organization is cheering the overturning of New York City's soda ban at the same time as a Suffolk County doctor and legislator prepares to testify before the U.S. Senate about energy drink marketing. Dave Lucas reports.
A state appeals court has ruled that New York City's plan to ban large sugary drinks from restaurants and other eateries was an illegal overreach of executive power, upholding a lower court decision back in March that struck the law down and dealt a blow to the outgoing Bloomberg administration. The ban would have prevented restaurants, movie theaters, and certain other establishments from selling any sugary beverage larger than 16 ounces. National Federation of Independent Business New York State Director Mike Durant.
Our concern was one to protect the small businesses in New York City, but also prevent another poor public policy idea that comes out of New York City up the Hudson and ends up becoming a statewide problem.
In recent years, Bloomberg has pushed through bans on smoking in all public places, trans fats in foods, alcohol sales, and most controversially, the sale of 16-ounce soft drinks.
To go on a crusade where he's talked about popcorn and soda and all these things is really an infringement on the freedom of choice, on consumer choice, and on small business owners' choice to sell those goods. And our mission, NFIB's mission, is to protect the right for our members, the small business owner, to own and operate their business. And this drastic continuation of government overreach that we feel by the mayor in New York City is hurting small business and is doing quite the opposite. So we're very proud today that the little guy got a victory.
And that victory may be short-lived. Bloomberg's administration has already indicated it will appeal the latest decision. Meantime, Suffolk County legislator William Spencer, who led a successful local effort to ban the marketing of energy drinks to minors, tells WAMC he plans to testify Wednesday before the Senate Commerce Committee in Washington in hopes of getting a similar ban imposed nationwide.
There is an unlevel playing field. I am a big advocate of personal liberties and capitalism, and I'm fine with that. I'm not trying to limit commerce. But what I am trying to do is I am concerned when you send a direct mail or sample to a child, that's egregious, that's easy. So I think restricting direct mail to minors is one option. And again, I'm not trying to take away personal liberties. I just want to give parents a fighting chance to be able to make informed choices for their kids.
Spencer says advertisers for the drinks, which include brands like Monster, Red Bull, and Rockstar, spend more than $130 million annually on samples and marketing campaigns targeting children under 18 for a product that is not recommended for minors.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
You're listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm Katie Britton. Upstate New York Congressman Bill Owens toured Imperial Industrial Park in Plattsburgh. The half-million-square-foot facility, one of the largest buildings in the North Country, hosts a number of tenants, including contractors for Novabus and Bombardier. Pat Bradley was there.
Democratic Congressman Bill Owens first toured the Imperial Industrial Park 10 years ago when it was a vacant former wallpaper manufacturing plant. The facility is now 80% occupied with 30 tenants employing more than 200 people. Imperial property manager David Bray explained that there is substantial activity occurring.
Bombardier is going to be moving in. This will be their third-party logistics warehouse. And as a result of that, we've just got to create lots of new spaces. So we have construction projects going on all over the place today.
Nice.
And we'll be through October.
That's great.
It's creating lots of jobs. And I want to thank you very much for your support of Buy U.S. and Buy New York, because that's worth a lot of jobs here.
Bray said it has been a challenge refitting the 500,000-square-foot facility from the original single-tenant facility to a multi-tenant, multi-use industrial park. But they've been able to attract contractors for the region's major transportation manufacturers.
A lot of our tenants are supporters of both Bombardier and Novabus, where they have to have the U.S. content. They do everything from make the skins to the buses here to motors for the trains. Pipe bending, any pipe that you can imagine that would go into a bus or a train gets bent here, and there's still more talking to us. Now my challenge is to find enough space to be able to fit them in.
Owens noted while the U.S. content is a key factor in attracting business to the industrial facility, he also wants to assure suppliers from Canada will want to locate at the site.
The U.S. content requirement for Bombardier trains, Novabus, those are very important for requiring, if you will, the manufacturing to occur in the United States. So obviously that's a big boon. What we're seeing here is not just Bombardier, but all their suppliers. In addition to that, we want to make sure we keep the border fluid. That's incredibly important to this process because there has to be a perception and a reality that people and goods can move back and forth across the border. If we're successful in doing that, we will have done the two big things that are necessary to continue the growth here.
After a brief look at activity outside the building, David Bray took Congressman Owens inside.
I didn't know what you wanted to look at, Bill, but we can take you through some of the places that we've rebuilt. And
Some
of the stuff that we had in progress.
I mean, when we walked through this 10 years ago, it was virtually empty.
I had a vacuum cleaner company that was in here.
Now, how many of these companies have a Canadian parent?
I bet 70%. I mean, you know, if I take a look at the total square footage rented, I bet it's probably closer to 80-85%.
Most of them have been coming, have been out of Canada.
As they ambled through the building, Owens encountered Ron Barnes, the product introduction materials supervisor for Bombardier, which leases space for his operation at the facility.
While the cars are under warranty, they break down.
So
we do all the warranty. All the parts to keep the cars going while they're under warranty come through our group.
Do you put people on the road every day?
We maintain the parts, and if there's an issue, we resolve it. It's very important to keep these cars running.
Owens was seeking to assess the cross-section of businesses that lease space. Bray showed off recent renovations, including those for a Montreal company called Syntube.
Right now, their contract is primarily with Nova Bus. Now that they've established, got their feet on the ground, they're talking to more and more companies. So I'm just expecting more expansion from them as time goes on. You know, here's just another one of the challenges we had to make this space work for them. We had to cut in a new door there. We had to repave the parking lot, make parking down there for them. And then because their trucks are lined up at the door now, it was blocking the road that gets us around the other side of the facility. So we had to build a new road farther away from the facility. So you think you're making progress, but it's going to cost me, you know, $100,000 to make that progress.
But all good stuff.
It's all good stuff.
The facility's renovations include a new boiler system that has reduced heating costs by more than $100,000.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
With this week's Legislative Notebook, I'm Katie Britton. A jury has decided former Governor George Pataki didn't violate sex offenders' rights by involuntarily committing them to mental institutions after they completed their prison terms. Sex offenders claim their rights were violated in the mid-2000s when the state transferred them to a psychiatric facility rather than let them go free at the end of their prison terms. State Attorney General Eric Schneiderman has sued a former SUNY executive and the daughter of former State Senate Majority Leader Joseph Bruno, claiming they filed fraudulent timesheets that cost the state $165,000. A complaint filed says John O'Connor allowed Susan Bruno to file reports overstating the hours she worked on 47 occasions after she was hired in 2003 at the Research Foundation of State University of New York. Governor Andrew Cuomo says the state is taking actions aimed at generating more than $3 billion in private sector loans for Superstorm Sandy rebuilding. The Department of Financial Services is making banks eligible for credit if they support Sandy recovery loans. The New York Rising Rebuilding Program aims to make infrastructure more resilient and help small businesses get back on their feet. The governor is also directing state agencies to prioritize rebuilding projects and to accelerate permit applications. The increased investment was made possible through the Community Reinvestment Act. It comes on top of $500 million in grants previously announced for recovery plans. A federal monitor suggests blacks and Hispanics have effectively been zoned out of 7 Westchester communities by rules limiting multifamily and affordable housing. The report is an effort to break an impasse over part of a 2009 settlement of a housing desegregation lawsuit threatening millions in federal funding for Westchester. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Katie Britton. And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. Copies of this program are available by calling 800-323-9262. That number again is 800-323-9262. Ask for program 1331. Or you can listen to or podcast the program at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Katie Britton.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.